I want to introduce you this morning. Mac Zimmerman. Mac is with Americans for Prosperity. First off, Mr. Zimmerman, morning, sir. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Now that the Broncos are 1-0, we're in pretty good shape.
Okay. And nobody took a knee last night, so we've got that.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, it's interesting because when each you know, say you get your paycheck twice a month. You get your paycheck and you know, you see how much is taken out, and it's something you just kind of, after the money's confiscated, that hurts, and then you move on. But it's interesting in this article about tax reform that one of your members had written, that what's behind the cost of taxes. I mean, there's that monetary value that we see out of each week, but the opportunity that is lost as a result of that money. I thought this was a really great article about areas that we can grow. And you know, a lot of people, one of the things that was written in this article, doing away with the death tax, that's appealing to a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit it right on the head. And, you know, in addition to that sort of off-the-top painful part that you're talking about that we see in our paycheck every couple of weeks, you know, there's what you have left also gets a chunk taken out of it, whether it's, you know, gas taxes at the pump or higher prices that you're having to eat when you're at the grocery store or buying school supplies or clothes for your kids because of how high the corporate tax rate is in America. You know, I think our top marginal rate all in is close to 40%. I mean, you compare that with other countries. I think the British are at about 15, Ireland at 12. Communist China, which is a communist country, is at 25%. So, you know, there's a lot of hidden costs that go along with those upfront costs, and that, you know, that robs us of the money that we take home every month, and it robs us of the opportunity to get on the ladder to upward mobility to improve our lives.
And there's a lot behind that, too, because, you know, whether it's you can afford to buy a new house or a better car, in the state of Illinois, we get a double beating because our property tax is so high. Basically, we buy a house twice in the state of Illinois to own a home.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. The tax code is incredibly anti-competitive and antiquated. You know, the last time that Congress and a president got together to do significant tax reform to modernize our code was 1986. You know, I don't know if you're a big football fan. The number one NFL draft pick in 1986 was Bo Jackson. And the number one movie at the box office was Top Gun. So it's been a while since they got around to kind of bringing our tax code up to speed and creating an environment where we can grow the economy, grow revenues for government, and provide more opportunities for people to improve their lives.
There was a part here that I didn't understand, and I was specifically hoping you could help me. In this article, it talks about Americans' prosperity idea of going from a current worldwide to a territorial system when it comes to being taxed. I'm sorry, but I don't understand.
Yeah, so the worldwide system, this is something that you've probably heard people talk about in the past that really puts American companies at a disadvantage with their foreign rivals. In America, if you have a foreign subsidiary with a domestic company, you get taxed twice. You pay your taxes in the foreign country where maybe one of your offices might be located or one of your outlets of some kind, but then you also pay U.S. taxes on that profit. So one of the things that you see happening is a lot of American companies that are doing business worldwide will keep their money overseas because if they bring home their capital and profits to invest in the U.S., to build jobs here, to pay workers more, that gets hit a second time. If you move to a territorial system, then you're in a situation where it's only getting taxed once in the place where the money's made. And that's how a lot of our foreign rivals are taxed. And so, you know, in many ways, American businesses are trying to compete globally with one arm tied behind their back. And we've got a tax code that's actually pushing American companies to go to places that have greener pastures and acting as a disincentive for them to bring their profits home after they have success there. And so, you know, we really got to get up to speed, create an environment where American companies are more competitive with their foreign rivals. And frankly, here at home, a system that allows small companies to be more competitive with large ones.
And the Trump administration, when they're talking about this tax reform, we're talking about a number of different areas, not the least of which lowering rates, reducing complexity, and igniting economic growth. One high-level detail includes repealing the death tax, increasing the standard deduction to $24,000, and getting rid of loopholes that benefit politically connected special interests at the expense of everyday families. So these are some of the concepts that are being written into policy and law as we speak?
Yeah, the administration and the Republican leadership in Congress are sitting at the table kind of hammering out details You know, as you noted from that piece, there's a few items that we do know about. Being able to reduce the current number of brackets from 7 to 3 to make that, and lowering the rates so that people can take home more of what they earn. You know, something like 90% of the people in America had to hire a tax professional or use software to file their taxes. You know, but when you have 7 brackets and these multiple tax rates that are all part of that, and then you mentioned carve-outs and deductions that litter the tax code. I mean, over the years, the federal government has created special tax provisions to pay for special giveaways for everything from publicly funded stadiums to rum distilling to racehorses and even motor speedways. I mean, things that you traditionally think of, you know, as core functions of government. So, you know, when they build those kinds of items into the code, everybody else has to pay an artificially higher rate in order to finance those giveaways. And so, you know, that's great if you've got a lobbyist who's got some juice in Washington. You can get your piece of the action in the tax code. But if you're just a regular everyday American who doesn't have a guy in D.C., you know, chances are you're probably not going to get a special carve out in the code, and you're going to be the one who's picking up the tab so that somebody else can. So, you know, getting rid of some of those, flattening the code, and getting rid of unfair mechanisms like the death tax, which, you know, people try to save money for their future, whether it's a family farm, small business, or a nest egg for their kids. You know, and then they turn around after they've paid taxes on all that money their whole life, and then the government wants to take a big chunk out because they treat your death as a taxable event. I mean, that just doesn't make sense. It's not something that is conducive to people planning for the future, and it's frankly just incredibly unfair. So, you know, we're excited about what we've seen so far, and we're hoping that they make some progress in the coming weeks.
I wonder if President Obama would call that cruel.
Great question.
You know, because, I mean, when you think about it, I actually spoke with someone the other day. They moved out of the state of Illinois. They were elderly because they wanted some of the money to be left to give to their kids after they passed away. So they left the state of Illinois. Well, how does this – can we cut taxes when we just hit the new federal debt limit? $20 trillion last Friday, a single-day jump of $317 billion. Can a country that's $20 trillion in debt cut its taxes?
I'm actually really glad you asked that question, because this is sort of the talking point that we're going to hear from a lot of people on the left in the coming weeks and months. If you look throughout history, look at the Kennedy tax cuts, tax reforms, the Reagan tax reforms in 86, and even the Bush tax cuts in 2003. In the 10-year budget window after each of those tax reforms were put into place, government revenues actually increased substantially. To the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, even after the 2003 tax cuts, when we had a recession in 2008 and a real estate crash, over the 10-year period, revenue still went up substantially. In fact, the government generally gets more revenue after tax cuts are put into place because of the growth engine and the economic activity it creates. And I'll give you an example, because it doesn't just apply to the federal government. It also applies to state government. After the Reagan tax cuts in 86, the national economy grew at around 4% through 1990. Now, you compare that with growth rates after Obama, which were around 1%, even with his giant stimulus. The revenues, if the economy had grown at that higher rate under Obama, state and local governments would have collected about $650 billion more in taxes. And part of that is because there's more jobs. Part of that is because people have more disposable income to the tune of $2,000 or $3,000 a year. That's what happened after those three tax cuts that I just talked about. And so, you know, when that happens, people have more money in their pockets. They have more opportunities because there's more job creation. In fact, there were between 7 and 12 million jobs created after each of those tax cuts. And you get more money for the federal, state, and local governments to make investments in things like transportation and you know, the classrooms and schools and better teacher pay and all those things that you hear people on the left talk about that they want. And frankly, thoughtful people across the board. But if you want all those things, the best thing to do is to grow the pie and to let people go out there and pursue their dreams, not to try to collect as much money as you can in taxes and then let, you know, people who think they know more than the rest of us figure out ways to divide the pie that's not growing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way you have to do things.
And, you know, there's another thing whenever you do this, the attitude that comes along with people knowing that there's a certain level of freedom and elbow room financially they didn't have before, that it changes people's attitudes about investment and growing forward and growing instead of developing a siege mentality, us against them when it comes to the government. I've got to protect everything because they're really in my back pocket,
yeah.
As opposed to, wow, now I've got a little elbow room. Maybe I can grow this. Maybe I can have more. Maybe I can hire another person.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. You know, it gives people the ability to save for a child's college, to plan for their own retirement, to maybe take that chance on the small business that they've always been thinking about in the back of their mind. And I mean, you hit it on the head. When growth rates are at 1%, 2%, and people are sort of struggling to get by. I mean, I read a statistic recently that something like half of America would be broke if they had an unexpected $400 expense. I mean, that's not how you how to have an economy that benefits people across the board. So, we want to give people the ability to take risks and to make the financial choices that they want to make. Instead of like you said, waiting for somebody else to do the command and control, make those decisions for us. And by the way, when that's how you do things, you mean you look at the stimulus, you know who's going to get the biggest piece of the pie. It's going to be the person with the best lobbyist. We get right back to that. So, we want to restore power and financial choice to people instead of, continuing to centralize those decisions in Washington and state capital.
You were talking about things that get built with taxpayers' money. I think I saw one. It was a museum on organized crime. And I'm thinking that's kind of ironic.
There's definitely no shortage of imagination from politicians in Washington when it comes to spending.
Yeah, let's talk about, and what's weird is, organized crime, and so what do? You see Al Capone, and why you go to prison? Sure, he killed 27 people, but he went to prison for taxes. So, actually, there's an abject lesson there, I think, as well. Max Zimmerman, he's with Americans for Prosperity.